Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. Watch the news of...
Watch the news. No, not in years. Thanks.
Have you heard the news?
Heard the news. No, not in years. Thanks. Yeah, of course. I watch the news every day.
I was in the middle of a sentence. Have you heard the news? Have you heard the news about Josh Hancock, the former St. Louis Cardinal who was tragically killed?
Yes, of course. You know, I'm a big baseball fan.
I mean, that's tragedy. He was... killed before he drove he left a restaurant, Mike Shannon's restaurant, he crashed into a flatbed tow truck that was parked.
Right.
And that's a really sad thing.
Yeah, 25-year-old major league pitcher, you know, bright future. It was a real shame.
I have to say, though, I think what is also a shame is that what his father is doing.
Mm-hmm.
His father is suing Mike Shannon, owner of Mike Shannon's restaurant, because his son consumed alcohol before he left that.
At the restaurant.
He's also suing the owner of the tow truck.
Yeah, you know how these things go. You know, it's just something happens, and I think we all feel the need to blame somebody, and we don't want to blame the person we're closest to. So we start assigning blame to others. We don't want to blame the person who's passed away. We want to start assigning blame to other people.
I understand the reaction of a father or a loved one or even a friend to the loss of a loved one. I understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that that person wants to lash out. I don't understand why our system, our legal system, which is supposed to be there to provide structure for us to make the rational choices when there are conflicts, allows a family member in a situation like that to sue someone like the owner of the flatbed truck and the bar owner.
Right, you might as well sue the road paver while you're at it.
And the car manufacturer. Mm-hmm. Because, and to do it with the financial gain, okay, because... Mike Shannon was just operating his restaurant. The owner of that tow truck parked his truck.
In a legal spot.
I'm not sure that it was legal or not.
Okay.
I don't know, but it was at the side of the road. But in any event, it was a parked car, okay? Now, you know, things aren't always this clear-cut, but let's look circumstantially. They know for a fact that when Josh Hancock ran into this parked truck, he was speeding. He was also using his cell phone. He wasn't wearing his seatbelt, and there was marijuana in the SUV that he was driving. And it should also be mentioned that he had had another automobile accident 3 days prior at 5:30 in the morning. Maybe the tow truck owner should be able to sue his estate for recovery of the tow truck.
Right.
But I don't think a tow truck owner would do that out of respect and just sort of leave it be. But in any event, why do we not assign people individual responsibility? If I go into a bar and I drink too much and I get into a car...
That's my choice.
And I should be arrested and I should have my license taken away. Yes, I agree. If I, as a bar owner, serve someone who is so out of control that they can't speak and they're... I understand that I have a responsibility to stop that from happening.
Agreed.
But there... Look, I've been in this business for a long time. And there are people whom I know now, and I have, you know, people I
That's
know
something
who
that I think that maybe people who aren't in this business, who don't go out a lot or don't, you know, aren't night owls and see this. There are people out there who can walk up to you, have a conversation, be totally lucid
after seven scotches.
After seven scotches, and if you hadn't been walking around town with them or know that they were at five other bars before they were at your bar. There's no possible way you could know. I mean, there are people who have become highly skilled at covering the fact that they're drunk.
Well, and also people who drink a lot. Alcohol affects different people differently. Mm-hmm. So you may be at 0.12. But if you drink every night, mm-hmm. There are people who... And the thing is, look, if this guy was in Mike Shannon's bar and they served him 20 drinks, maybe there's an issue there.
Sure.
But there are people who walk into a bar, I know, friends of mine. And, you know, I live in Jersey City. I don't need to drive home when I go out. I can get a cab or a train home or a subway home from Manhattan or Jersey City or Hoboken. So, you know, if I go out in an evening, frankly, myself, if I went out and I went to a bar after work and then I had a bite to eat and I had some wine and I went someplace after that and I went to a third bar, I could probably be over the legal limit, and you probably would. And
sure.
The most skilled bartender there is.
Sure, especially with the legal limit, especially with the legal limit being dropped now to 0.08. It's an area where it's very difficult sometimes to tell whether someone is over the limit or not.
But
it's just difficult. We don't know in this case in the Josh Hancock case. We don't know if he had 20 drinks at Shanahan's. We don't know if he had one drink at Shanahan's. We just don't know.
But
we're talking to a larger point here.
You know what I love is when you meet
here.
Shannon.
Shanahan's, O'Reilly's, whatever.
I'm offended. Anyway.
McCormick's. No, isn't it all the same?
But the idea... You know, I think why this really strikes a chord in our industry is because there is this reflex to sue in our society.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you sue a major corporation like Walmart or I don't know, pick your major corporation. I think there's too much of that going on. They have a legal department. Mike Shannon probably doesn't have a lawyer on staff. He has an insurance company.
Mike Shanahan probably doesn't have one either, huh?
Yeah, well, you know, they all those Irish. But what... The idea is when we get sued, and we get sued once in a while, somebody mm-hmm. trips and falls two stores down,
right.
And we get sued.
Right.
And it's, you know, it really is disrupting to the ability to continue your day and carry on business. And I especially,
The problem is there's not enough recourse to the frivolous lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And when we talk about the legal system, there's not enough recourse to, hey, you know what, you fell a block away from my establishment. You didn't even come in my establishment. Why am I on your lawsuit?
That's a real lawsuit, by the
right.
way.
Right. This is just something that happened to Francis and me. Somebody fell in front of one of the theaters, and we brought them ice and called an ambulance for them and were named in a lawsuit. That happens. Okay, this is a real instance. It really happened. We mean it. And, yes, we were dismissed from that lawsuit, but it was something that we had to deal with. Our organization
and
had
to deal. And
we
paid money to lawyers to get mm-hmm. dismissed from it. But the other thing is, look... I don't know, this guy had drank a lot, mm-hmm. and he did a lot of damage, and he's hurt Mike Shannon, and he's hurt the owner of that tow truck. Where is his responsibility? We're all sorry that he's gone. We're sad that he's gone. It's a terrible tragedy. The man evidently needed help, and he threw it all away, and that's tragic. But I think to blame it on the guy who owns the bar...
Or the tow truck, especially.
Or the tow truck, when you're driving at twice the legal limit for alcohol, which he was...
Mm-hmm.
Using a cell phone, not wearing a seatbelt, smoking marijuana, or at least marijuana in the car, and you've gotten in accidents before. Sorry, I think that the bar owner should be off the hook, tow truck owner should be off the hook, and you know people should take individual responsibility. Hey, we're going to talk about a happier topic in just a moment. John Peterson's going to join us. He's been on the show before. Now the documentary about his life is going into broad distribution. It's going to be opening at Lincoln Center this weekend and opening around the country. He owns Angelic Organics, and the book about his life is The Real Dirt on Farmer John. We'll talk with him in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left in Captain Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And our guest today is John Peterson. John is a farmer of the largest CSA farm in the United States. His farm is Angelic Organics. He's been on the show before. The documentary about his life is called The Real Dirt on Farmer John.
Farmer John, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back, you guys.
You know, I think that you were meant to come on our show again. You're famous now, right? I mean, now, when we talked about your show last time, there was a limited version of the show going to be on, right before it went on to PBS. We've actually seen the whole show, the whole movie, because we got it on DVD. But You're going into national distribution. You're opening at Lincoln Center this weekend, right?
Well, Lincoln Plaza is near Lincoln Center. Lincoln
Well, same neighborhood.
It's so close.
Yeah, it's so close. And also the Quad. Tomorrow night, we're opening those two theaters.
Well, and we're going to link on our website when we go back to the restaurants. We're gonna have the web guy put up how to find out the information. But you can find it on moviephone.com or any of those things. It's The Real Dirt on Farmer John, and you should go. You know how I
well, you can go to farmerjohnmovie.com as well.
Do you know how I found out about that you were going to go, that you were going to be here?
Yeah, you were wandering the farmer's market. you were looking for the perfect plum.
It's a little early for plums, man. You're a farmer. You should know that.
In the category,
that's why he was still looking.
in the category of we really do put our money where our mouth is, on Wednesdays I go to the green market in New York, and we have relationships with a lot of farmers. So I'm walking around with a hand truck full of, like, scapes and, you know, spring onions and spring garlic and stuff, and some woman comes up to me and she says, do you know the real dirt about Farmer John? I'm like, I know Farmer John. And that was your producer. You're doing a lot of publicity in New York to push this show. And I said, and when she found out that I knew you, she said, well, get him back on the radio. He's opening on Friday. So now your life, since this movie has come out, this documentary about your life, you've been touring with it. It's been big in Europe, and it's kept you off the farm a little bit. How's your life changed?
This is my third spring of not being on the farm.
Does that hurt you?
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, and I don't get more separated from it. You know, some things we can drift away from when we're not around them, but mm-hmm. the memories become, or the attraction becomes stronger.
Who's running your farm now?
Well, I have a general manager, Bob Bauer. He's in the movie. He's the one who took the pay cut from like $70,000 down to $6,000 a year to come and work on the farm. And it's going pretty well on the farm, but I miss being there, especially in the spring. And this movie has really called me out and sort of created, or maybe, clarified a mission for me, because I know it means a lot to people, and we've been getting comments from people from all over the world because it's been airing on television in many countries, and people write us, and I can tell that it makes a big difference to a lot of people. So I'm staying with it, and now I'm going to be touring in the States and then a lot of other countries later this year, and I'm hoping that next spring I can be back on the farm. But I'm not sure, because it seems one country gets it and then another country wants it, and I have a hard time saying no to these countries.
I have a hard time saying no to countries as well. John, I...
Well...
Very few countries ask Mark to do anything, though, so...
I will tell you...
Well, no, a country to me always means a lot of work. But I like to do it because I like to share this story. And, you know, it's a twofold story, really. It's a personal story, and it's a global story. And so when I really... encapsulated, I say it's a story of hope, and that's the personal side, and it's a story of sustainability.
You know, John, we had you on the show a little over a year ago, and I guess it was about, we were in the middle of spring when last we had you on the show, and when we talked, you were very excited about the things that were happening with the movie, and you were talking about, you know, I'm going to separate from the farm for a little while, and I'm going to go and pursue these other pursuits, and it seems you're a little bit more melancholy about that, about missing not being on the farm for as long a period of time as you haven't been on the farm. Is that true?
Yeah, it's becoming a more powerful lack, a bigger absence for me, and these guys on the farm, I mean, they'll call me, they might have a technical problem, some question about the potato planter or a bearing or a cooling system. And the thing that really got me was I have a Case International tractor, 1394. We have a long relationship. And my machinery guy there called me when I was in Mexico, and he was outside, and he was actually sitting on this tractor, and I said, well, start it up. Well, that really did it for me.
The
sound of a tractor coming to life for me is it's a siren call. And
it's funny, I live in Jersey City. We have different kind of sirens that I hear at night. we need to take a quick break. We'll be back with Farmer John Peterson. The movie about his life is The Real Dirt on Farmer John. It's opening this weekend at a couple places in Manhattan, in Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and Quad Cinemas, and all around the country after that. We'll be back in just a moment. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back at the Restaurant Guys. Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. We're talking with John Peterson. The movie is a documentary about his life. Opens in New York this weekend. You should go and see it and find out about it. It's called The Real Dirt on Farmer John. John, since you've been on the show last... You know, John Peterson is everywhere, it seems, because I come home yesterday after agreeing to talking to your producer and getting you back on the show again for today, and then I opened up the New York Times, and there's a picture of you, not even about the movie. There was an article written by Dana Bowen about an emerging literary movement of farmers who write, and you're a writer. You're everywhere. You're famous. What about farmers who write? What's the connection between writers and farmers or artists and farmers?
Well, farming is—it's in itself very expressive. When you just observe what happens on a farm, all the activities and the way the plants express themselves in their myriad ways and unfold into different stages of evolution, the animals, there's just a tremendous vitality and diversity on a farm. So a farm is a very expressive place, and I would like people to take note of this who say, I endured driving across the Midwest because I think the Midwest is a fascinating place to drive through because you see all this life. And an artist, you know, the artist sensibility is very much about expressiveness and about differentiating and diversity. And so I consider a farm and artistic sensibility very compatible, even though typically people who are really immersed in farming, they're so busy with it because farms are jealous. They want everything. And so it's hard to find the time.
Restaurants are that way, too.
Restaurants are jealous, aren't they?
Yes, they really are.
So it's probably really hard for you guys to find the time to pursue your creative life.
Radio shows aren't as jealous as restaurants.
They're an hour a day. You know, I think that's interesting that you pointed. We're going to have to take a break for the news, but when we come back, I want to talk more about this with the idea of the farmer as artist, because I think, you know, while the farm is an expression of life, it's not a wilderness. It's a farm, and it's planted by a farmer in a certain way, and a farmer works with the rhythms of nature but also affects them. We're going to be talking more with John Peterson. The movie about his life is The Real Dirt on Farmer John, opening this weekend in New York. We'll be talking with him in just a moment after the news. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Our guest today is John Peterson. The book, the movie about his life is called The Real Dirt on Farmer John. It opens, just so you know, in New York this weekend, in Boston after that, then on to Los Angeles, Pasadena, Atlanta, Austin, Dallas, Houston, Seattle, Arlington, Baltimore, Detroit, and San Antonio. And John's going to be in all those places to do some questions and answers as it receives broad release across the country.
John, you know, you started this movie, it seems like a really long time ago. You know, I just want to do a little recount of the movie because we haven't really talked about it that much. This movie pretty much starts with you as a little kid. How did you know you were going to do a movie when you were a little kid?
My mother must have known.
She saw it in your eyes from way back when, huh?
Tell us about how the documentary part of it really. Now, there's a lot of old footage that your family took, et cetera, and so forth, of the farms, and it really does document sort of the demise and then the rebirth of an American farm. But when did the documentary start in earnest?
96. So there was footage shot kind of randomly up until then, although I was in a few short films by the director, Taggart Siegel, of The Real Dirt on Farmer John. So it came about by my meeting him. Well, there was a lot of footage from the first 25, 30 years of my life already. And then I met Taggart, and right after I met him, the farm was crashing. And Taggart was studying film, and so he made a documentary of the auction on my farm called Bitter Harvest. That was in 83. Well, then my life was in ruins. I was just on this, I was lost, and I was wandering in the Latin America, and I was writing and kind of exploring myself, performing, and Taggart sometimes was with me, and he would hit a camera, he'd kill me. But when I came back to the farm to start it up again, which really came out of that long journey that I was on, and a process of discovery, when I felt like I feel now, again, like I feel, wow, I want to get back and farm. And in the 80s, that feeling built up in me more and more. And I went back and started the farm up as an organic farm. And Taggart was still in my life, and by the mid-90s, we were so astounded by this resurrection of this place that had been so beaten down, it was dead. There was almost nothing left, almost no land left. And here it was now an emerging organic splendor. And we thought, wow, we have a great story to share with the world. This is a story of hope and possibility.
You know, I think that it's one of the touching things about the film is, and you can, you know, you really participate in the film as a documentary because it was begun as a documentary of what was a tragedy and a sad end, so it seems. And now it's continued on its completion to the rebirth, which is...
I like part two better.
Well, but you know, when you see the footage of the auction at your farm, when basically everything that had been in your family for generations was being sold, and sold to farmers around you who many of them would be auctioned a few years later, because, you know, the American family farmer, and let's be clear here, people, the American family farmer is under siege still today. And there are some ways that people can stay on the farm. Like we talk about our farmers all the time that we deal with. You come to our restaurants and we talk about the farm's name on the plate, and you buy our product and we can support them. But the most family farms in America are being put under the family farm. The farm subsidies don't go to the family farmers. They go to the big corporate agribusiness farmers that find miles and miles of commodity crops and still sort of work to put these family farms out of business. So this is a very current, very salient film for both the hope that it brings and the way that some farms can and the community can come together to keep a farm alive and to rejuvenate a farm, but also for the cautionary tale of what can happen to our farms. What's the state of farming today, John?
On my road in Boone County, we're really the only working farm in miles in either direction. And And it's because we came back in a new way. Like the only way we're able to survive is to look at this and go, okay, how do we flourish or survive in today's environment, today's economic climate for agriculture? How can we do that? And we chose the community-supported agriculture model, and that gives us a direct relationship to the people that get our vegetables, and it creates a community, and it provides a source of capital. And there are about 2,000 or more of these farms in the United States today, and they're in business because they're able to use this model where they work very closely with their customers. And it's a model of cooperation between the consumer and the producer, which is a rare thing. You don't, in the community-supported agriculture model, ideally, and this actually holds up in practice to a large degree, the people who are buying the vegetables are looking out for the farmer, and the farmer is looking out for the farmer's customers, called shareholders.
Yeah. You know, I want to go back to CSAs in just one second and talk about exactly how that works. But, you know, we talked about how this is kind of a new model, and I think the CSA portion of this is a new model. But is farming the land the way you're farming it now, is that a completely new idea, or is it really just a development of the way you did it 50 years ago and kind of we've come back to it?
Yeah, well, on my farm, it's quite different just because we're growing different crops. They're different enterprises, really. And raising vegetables is very, very different from, like, we had dairy and poultry before when I was growing up. But if you look at the systems that are applied to organic or biodynamic or sustainable farming today, they draw on the past. They're not the same as the past. There's different technology. There are you know, different materials that are available, but a lot of the premises are the same.
I just feel like the philosophies, we've gone back in time a little bit with the philosophies, and I'm going to say to a better time.
I think we need to bring our audience up to speed here. What a CSA is that's when a farm has subscribers who subscribe and say, okay, I'll give you this much for my produce for this year, and for the entire time that the farm is producing, every week there's a box of vegetables that comes from that farm. You're not exactly sure what's in it or how much it will be. If there's an abundant summer, you'll get more. If there's a drought,
if there are 200 shareholders, you get 1/200th of what's produced.
But more importantly, if the weather's good, you get more, and if the weather's not so good, you don't get as much. And that sort of gets people to invest in the land. It also mitigates the risk for a farmer. It also cuts out the middleman and keeps the farmer on the farm. Was that an accurate description?
Yeah, and it deepens the relationship of the customer or the shareholder to the land. Because once that shareholder signs up for a relationship to a farm, for a season with a farm, suddenly the weather is weather that's growing their crops, or it's in the way of their crops, hampering their crops. The seasons, the soil, the, you know, they start developing an affinity for the land in a way that wasn't there before. And then great things start to happen, because when people get in relationship, when they start to feel a connection, they can feel protective, they can feel supportive. Like in our case, the shareholders pooled $200,000 to buy land next door so that we could have an adequate land base. A lot of extraordinary things happen to build community around agriculture, and it's a very, very important thing today, because so many people are so cut off from the land, and here's a way people can get back in relationship to the land without changing their lifestyle very dramatically.
I want to talk to you. I did just recently ride through the Midwest on a motorcycle through part of it, and it was amazing to me to see what's out there, and I want to talk about how it's changed. And what's going on at those farms around you that aren't farming when we come back in just a second? Our guest is John Peterson. The film is The Real Dirt on Farmer John, opening this weekend at Lincoln Plaza in New York. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 1145.
Let me talk to you about lighting, and specifically about how you can enhance the appeal of any space. Lighting is a powerful, emotional, and aesthetic force. It's one of the most important elements of design. More than anything else, it sets the mood and tone for an entire experience. A room pops or it doesn't based on lighting. Lights on 9 is a top-notch commercial and retail lighting supplier. Lights on 9 supplied all the lights for our award-winning Catherine Lombardi restaurant, inside and out, dining room and kitchen. Lights on 9 has everything from tasteful and stylish chandeliers to table and floor lamps to outdoor lighting for illuminating a building or walkway or a sign. At Lights On 9, the service is exemplary, expert, and knowledgeable. They ship anywhere in the continental United States for free. Their retail store is in the Galleria Shopping Center on Route 9 in Manalapan. They're open 7 days a week. Call them at 732-308-9166. That's 732-308-9166. Or visit them at lightson9.com. That's lightson9.com.
Central Jersey Talk Radio. Central Jersey 1450. WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. We're talking with John Peterson about farming. His book is The Real Dirt on Vegetables. The movie, the documentary about his life, is opening across the country. It'll be this weekend at Lincoln Plaza Cinemas and at the Quad Cinemas in New York. And you can find out more information on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. John, this is a film about you and your farm. And in a way, you're an unusual guy. And that's what we love about you. But in a way, your tale is very much the tale of what happened to the American family farmer. What happened in the 50s and 60s to your farm that happened to so many other farms? Why did they just start to go extinct?
Excuse me. Well, chemicals came in.
How did chemicals affect that?
They just made it so farmers could farm in different ways. They could expand, and then the cost a little less to produce the crop, and it just threw the balance off in these communities, and people realized that now they could have a lot more corn, a lot more beans, and control the weeds, and control the bugs, and control the blights, and then the machinery got bigger, and I mean, there's so many things. It's hard to really look for a reason because it's a complex of influences that converged.
But it basically became possible to farm miles at a time.
Yeah.
And that's more economically efficient. So to have a 300-acre farm became economically unviable, right?
Right. And the problem with the chemicals is, many problems, but it takes people out of the relationship to the earth. I mean, you have a different relationship to weather and to soil and to the whole process of growing when you have those, they're like mediators, or they come in between you and the process of farming.
How were pests and blights and those sorts of things dealt with by a traditional farmer in the 1950s with a 300-acre farm before chemicals? How were they dealt with back then?
Well, crop rotation, and then the soil was able to be more fertile and more healthy because there was usually a source of manure on the farm, and there was more diversity. So if one thing went down, another, you know, the other parts of the operation could keep the farm going. And anyway, by the 70s, so many farms were gone.
But why wasn't it a good thing? We can produce more crops. We can buy larger acreages. Why wasn't that a good thing for the farmer?
Well, when you're ruining the land, it's a bad thing. And as Gore's film, Inconvenient Truth, makes clear, if you don't have the land, if you don't have a planet on which to act out or live out your lives, then you got a problem. So you can't put everything into an economic model.
I think that, well, you know what? You probably can put it into an economic model, but you need to look more broadly than this year's crop.
And in fact, you need to look more broadly than, you know, economies tend to look, a long-sighted economic actor who acts only on money may look at a 20-year cycle. But if in 20 years you've denuded the land, well, you've made something at 100 years down the road, or 30 years down the road, or 50 years down the road, is really a tremendous, terrible tragedy.
Yeah.
With the price not necessarily paid by the investor who ruined the land.
No, it's true. No, and the pollution that there is everywhere. I mean, you turn a tap in the Midwest, and you're going to be drinking all kinds of herbicides, and so it just become a huge loss, not just of farms and farmers, but of relationship to the land. That's a really, really key thing, and that's what's getting restored through these, well, like farmers markets. People go and chat with the farmers, they hear about the weather or the community supported agriculture model, In general, organic certainly helps, but that doesn't necessarily, you know, when people shop in an organic store, it doesn't necessarily mean that they have a special intimate relationship with what the weather that's happening.
But when you know your farmer by name, whether you're at a CSA, with a community-supported agriculture farm that you subscribe to, and you can find out on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, how to subscribe to a CSA in whatever area of the country you're in. You can just do a search for it on our website. You'll find that out. Or when you go to the farmers markets, like, you know, where I ran into your producer on Wednesday, the relationship is completely different. John, I just want to ask you, because we have to go soon, but I want to ask, the people who are listening to this show, the people who go out and buy food every week, they've got the choice as to whether this works or not, right? I mean, the consumers, the people who care, the people who go out to find, to buy locally and get great food from people that they know, they make a big difference, don't they?
Yes, these people are powering a revolution. I've been touring the country, and I've been showing the film a lot, and I talked to a lot of farmers, CSA farmers. The demand is skyrocketing for the community-supported agriculture, and that's not just for food, that's for the relationship. So you have something extraordinary happening in the country. You've got a half million to a million people getting their vegetables now from community-supported agriculture farms.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think that you've been a big part of that, and hopefully we've had a little part in it ourselves. John, it was great to have you on the show.
Thanks so much, John.
Great to be back.
Good luck with your opening at Lincoln Plaza. Maybe we can grab a night off one of these weekends and go see it, even though we've seen it before. It's tremendous. The show is the movie is The Real Dirt on Farmer John. You can find out more about him and it on our website. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, stage left in Cafe Lombardi. Our guest was John Peterson. His movie is The Real Dirt on Farmer John. You can link to it on our website. Go see it. Just go see it.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I can't even describe the movie to you. It's not a dry documentary. It's fun, it's interesting, and it's important.
You know, I want to take today is the perfect day to announce something that Francis and I are doing that I think is going to be exciting and fun and help people kind of
connect with the farm.
Reacquaint themselves with the land and the farms. You've heard Francis and I talk a lot about this farm-to-table movement.
That's where the idea of farm-to-table is. We bring the food from the farm to you with as few middlemen as possible, and when you get
as quickly as possible. We go to the green market, and a tomato is picked in the morning. We go to the green market at 11:30. That tomato's on your plate at 6:30.
And we tell you what farm it comes from, and we actually know the farmer.
Mm-hmm.
That's farm-to-table.
Francis and I, we have a gentleman farmer friend by the name of Mike Baker who's got about 20, 30 acres in East Brunswick, and he's farming about 2 or 3 acres of it right now. And he's farming a lot of specialty things for us, and he's got a tiny little orchard that he's just nurturing. Anyway, we're going to do a program that we've titled Table to Farm. And at that program, you're going to come to Mike Baker's farm with us. We're going to set up some tables, and we're going to have dinner on the farm. And we're going to pick a tomato for you, and we're going to make a gazpacho for you right there from that tomato that we've just picked at the farm. We're going to pick a cucumber right there. We're going to make a Hendrix and cucumber martini for you right while you're sitting in the farm.
And we're going to do this as a series now, and it may be we're going to start it this year, mm-hmm. and then we're going to continue it on when there's nice weather next year. And we're going to take you to our farms. If you're interested in the Table to Farm program, you should email mark@stageleft.com. And we'll put you on the list. You can get on our mailing list. And when we do this dinner,
August 19th this year is when we're going to do it.
And as we do these dinners throughout, they're going to be a lot of fun. It's
mm-hmm.
really the logistics of bringing the kitchen to the farm are a little more difficult than bringing the farm produce to the kitchen. But it's going to be pretty awesome. And, you know, Mark and I, if we try to do one thing, it's we really do try to put our money where our mouth is in this. And
I'm very excited about this. I think it's going to be a lot of fun for our patrons, educational. You're going to learn something about how the produce gets from our farmers to your table.
I hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.